Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Welcome back to The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick. The waves of the Hudson River crashed against the pier in downtown Manhattan yesterday as the world's largest solar boat docked in the North Cove Marina. It's been a 284-day voyage. It's visited 28 countries, crossed three oceans and 11 seas, and get this, on almost no fossil fuel.
Looks like a floating platform. It does not have sails, unfortunately, which I miss, but basically it's to prove that you can actually sail around the world just using solar.
Now, the boat's sheer size attracted the attention of tourists and passers-by, workers. With the upper deck covered with 5,554 square feet of solar paneling, the MS Turner Planet Solar kind of looks like an aircraft carrier, but it's the first such boat to complete a trip around the world exclusively using solar energy. It's now sailing along the Gulf Stream as part of a scientific expedition organized by the University of Geneva in Switzerland. We went down and visited the boat yesterday while it was docked here in New York City, and I spoke with Captain Gerard Dabaville and members of the expedition team. Captain, we're standing in a little berth on the deck of the ship, and I'm looking at dozens and dozens of what appear to be 1 meter square solar panels.
Yes, a bit less. They are 80 centimeters by 80, and I don't even know how many there are, but we have a total of more than 500 meters. As we are not navigating, we are consuming a little bit with all the instruments on board, but our batteries are totally charged.
If the sun goes away completely, like you can be at sea and have overcast conditions mm-hmm. for many, many days, of course, how many days of power does this boat have?
We have about 72 hours of battery power reserve that we can use. If I foresee that the sun will be out for several days, then I reduce the speed so we don't consume much. If we go slowly, we consume very little. If we go fast, we consume a lot. So it's really an exercise of energy management.
How does this boat handle, you know, its performance, its ease of use? Obviously, it's not as fast as some boats, but that's okay. But how does it stack up?
Generally speaking, the boat is not very fast. Average speed when we crossed the Atlantic was 5.5 knots, which is not bad, not tremendous. The boat is also an ambassador of solar energy. And the boat, as you saw, is used for press conference, for meeting, for reception. It's not luxury, but it's big enough and comfortable, more comfortable than many boats I have been.
I'm sure you've been on much worse, I imagine.
Well, in 1980, a long time ago, I crossed the Atlantic from Cape Cod to France on a rowing boat, 5 meters long. So this is a bit more comfortable.
Under the power of your own arms or somebody else's?
Yes, nothing else.
Well, we appreciate your time in doing so and for allowing us on your bridge.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Thank you. After a short tour of the thoroughly modern boat, we sat down to talk climate change with leaders of the scientific expedition.
My name is Martin Beniston. I'm a professor at the University of Geneva. I head the Institute for Environmental Science, and I'm a climatologist by training.
My name is Bastian Ebelings. I'm also a professor at the University of Geneva. I'm an ecologist by training, and I focus on small things, microbes in water.
So this ship, gentlemen, as the captain explained to us, is an ambassador for solar power, obviously for clean locomotion. There's nothing special about this ship that's critical to your scientific mission, except as an excellent ambassador for low-carbon transportation, I assume.
Well, there is one detail that is interesting, because the ship doesn't emit any pollution, is that in some of the atmospheric measurements that we'll be making once we're out in the open ocean, we'll be sure that what we're measuring is of natural origin and not biased by the exhaust fumes of a traditional ship's chimney, for example.
And what is the nature of your research on the ship? What kind of results are you going after?
If everything goes well, there'll be some quite novel measurements coming out of this expedition in particular related to what the ocean emits in terms of aerosols, these fine particles that remain in suspension in the atmosphere that are released by the ocean through breaking waves, for example, and that can have different climate impacts according to the size and the nature of the particles that are in the atmosphere.
And what we aim to do with our work on this boat is to link what's happening in the ocean to what's happening in the atmosphere. Globally, primary production, which is the amount of carbon being fixed by phytoplankton in the ocean, is going down. And it's going down because of the way climate change is changing the ocean. If phytoplankton growth changes in the ocean, then also the production of aerosols by the ocean will change. It's climate change that's changing both the water and the atmosphere, and it all interacts in a complex way.
Professor, when we sometimes in the wintertime have a big snowstorm here, some of the television stations react with pieces that say, global warming's not real, it's snowing out, look how cold it is.
I think there's a difference between weather and climate, so the fact that the climate is changing, is warming, doesn't mean you cannot have snowstorms anymore. You just need to keep on explaining this to the public, that one thing doesn't exclude the other. And if that's a difficult message, you just need to repeat your message.
Especially in New York, with Wall Street not very far from where we are on this boat, I think people, economists, would understand that, you know, long-term trends of the stock exchange, you know, the value increases over time, but you can have these sort of momentary glitches like the 2008 crash, which, you know, In climate terms, you could have a sort of short cold period, whereas the overall trend is still a warming trend. You see?
Well, Professor, you just mentioned Wall Street, and we're not far from Wall Street. We're only around the corner here in a part of New York Harbor. Somebody has to make it so that you can make millions off of these solar cells that are lining this boat. Maybe you can make a little bit of money now, but not a lot of money. Wall Street needs to love these solar cells. How's that going to happen?
In some instance, I would probably bet more on economics than politics to start resolving some of the climate issues. You know, if a big firm understands that by reducing its carbon emissions, that's to say changing its energy use, they can still remain competitive, or maybe even more, become even more competitive because they're producing better for less energy use, then that's a message that can come across fairly quickly. So you need to, of course, to invest in the new energy technologies.
We say around here, follow the money, but I guess in this case you have to follow the money at 5.5 knots.
That's right, yeah.
No, but there's another aspect. You know, we cannot afford to wait until we know everything, because it's going to be too late. It's very difficult to change direction at the last moment. You need to act sooner.
All you need is the sun. As Planet Solar continues to raise awareness of energy sustainability and autonomy, visit our website, thetakeaway.org, for an exclusive video cut from the boat's trip around the Gulf Stream.